Welcome to Twisted Plot Podcast. Here is your host, Evelyn Marley.
Welcome to the podcast. Today, we're thrilled to have a very special guest, Matthew Pollard. Now, am I pronouncing your last name correctly? Because I heard you on another podcast and there was like four different pronunciations and I want to make sure it's one of those. So,
you know, I have to say my wife's still practicing it. So it, because it's an Australian accent, but it's an English surname. So it's actually pronounced Pollard. Most people pronounce it in America Pollard. So, you know, I've just got used to the fact, I mean, my background's sales, right? So you get used to people mispronouncing your surname. You learn not to take offense by it. People are doing their best. And as an Australian, I'm always struggling with people's surnames. So I've learned to forgive as much as I've learned to accept.
Well, I relate to that a lot because my maiden name was Soteropoulos. So, So you can imagine the conversations that were held around that one and the pronunciations. However, when I do go to the store, they still have that maiden name. And so I get to hear it every once in a while when they say Miss Soteropoulos. It's great. I love it.
Well, I enjoy when hotels tell me how my name is actually pronounced because I'll say my name, they'll ask me to spell it, and then they'll tell me, you mean Pollard. And I'm like, no, it's my name, but sure, you can call me that if you like.
You have quite the resume to go off of, and it's amazing. You know, Matthew is an internationally recognized consultant, speaker, blogger, author, mentor, coach, and serial entrepreneur who's achieved an extraordinary level of success at a very young age. So he's founded and grown five multi-million dollar businesses, and his client list includes multiple Fortune 500 companies. But your true passion relies in helping small business owners as the rapid growth guy, which I saw your little picture at the front of the Zoom is a little rocket. And it took me a minute, but rapid growth, right? Skyrocketing to the sky. Is that what I'm picking up there?
Well, that's it. Yeah. So my online program, when we were looking for a great way to explain it, the rocket ship, we kind of attached all the ideas to that. Because what I find is a lot of people think that rapid growth means running and working really hard. But what you find is 90% of the fuel that's used to get a rocket ship into orbit is just to get it off the ground. So, and you'll find that that's the case in a lot of people's small businesses. They work so hard, but they give up just before they hit the summit, if you like. But I also find that because they don't have a great strategy, you know, we talk about the fact that if a rocket ship is off, even by a slight amount, you know, it blows up in atmosphere. So, you know, it's so important that you get the strategy right first. So while a lot of people feel like it's comfortable to constantly strive forward and take action, if it's the wrong action or if the action's misaligned, then a lot of times you can work really hard going nowhere or even going in reverse. And that is the last thing I like seeing, you know, business owners do. It's the fear of not taking action that's the problem. But if we don't stop just for a moment to get the strategy right, we can't catapult forward.
That reminds me a lot of just the analysis paralysis that gets involved with getting stuck in the weeds of perfection, right?
Well, you really end up with two groups of people. So you get a lot of people that say, well, I've now quit my job and I'm starting my own business. I have to do something. This is something. Let's do this. And because of that, you'll find they take lots of actions very quickly. And they're the ones that tend to go after these shiny objects to get them to be successful. But then you also get that other group that say, no, I've got to get the strategy right. But then they spend all their time doing the analysis and then they never take action. And what actually happens, and I almost call this busy procrastination, because what happens is they do so much research, they're avoiding the uncomfortable things they don't want to do that a lot of times they have to do in order to be successful. Or they then say, oh, that's all too hard, and I'll go back to the thing that I want to do. Because most people just want to create a great six-figure income doing what they love in a business that revolves around them, their family, and their life, not the other way around. And then the realization of the fact that they may have to do some things that take them outside their comfort zone, well, let's go and do some more research before we ever have to do that. And of course, then they never do.
That really speaks to my heart there, Matthew, because I think that I have been there before, and I know some other coaches that I consult with. We've definitely experienced that, and it feels like good work. It feels like we're actually doing some productive work, but at the end, where is the actual growth coming from if we're not actually applying and taking action on these things? So you described that very well, especially at the beginning of my career here. So thank you for that. So a little background, how we got connected. I was listening to your book and I found you on social media and LinkedIn, and I connected to you through there. And then all of a sudden I got a message from you, and it was like, oh, the universe is just, you know, opening up for me. And I asked you if you'd come on this podcast, and you so graciously agreed. Now, is this outreach form for you? Because I have a lot of clients who do outreach, right? They do it through LinkedIn, and they do it strategically with people they know in their network, their second degrees, and also with people that they don't really know. So what advice can you give when entering the inbox of the LinkedIn to really engage people to continue the conversation so much as you did when you reached out to me?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and firstly, you know, I think we got connected because you liked, commented, or something on one of the posts, or one of the posts that were associated with the topic that I was involved in. And that's one of the key points that I follow. So when I'm networking, I'm also the same content applies, right? So if you're all about yourself, firstly, as an introvert like I am, you're not going to feel comfortable doing outreach. And a lot of people don't want to do those spam inbox messages and things like that. And that's where things kind of unravel, because they're like, okay, I want to run my own business, but now I need to do these things that I will just, it's inauthentic for me to do those things. So they won't. But the problem is that it goes down to, I'll give you an example. When I meet someone at a networking event, if I ask them what they do and they've really practiced, it's, I do this for this group of people, even if they have this common response. Like, I'm a sales and marketing trainer that works with small business owners, even if they think they're terrible at sales, or they think they can't do it. That is horrible. Like, it's so I. And that's why a lot of introverts do not like to utilize the really uncomfortable elevator pitches, where if somebody asks me what I do, well, firstly, I say I'm the rapid growth guy. And I usually will get asked that after 20 minutes when somebody's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I've been talking about myself for that long. You know, Matt, what is it that you do? Because I'm interested before I'm trying to be interesting. But then I will just respond with, I'm the rapid growth guy. This is what I call a unified message. And it separates me from everyone else because it gets people interested. They're like, I can't put that in a box. I have to ask, what exactly is that? And we can discuss that more in a minute if you're interested. But what then happens is, what I then lead into is, instead of saying, well, you know, I do this for this group of people, even if, I say, well, one of the things I love to see more than anything in the world is an amazing introverted service provider with enough talent, skill, and belief in themselves to go and start a business of their own. But what I find more often than not is they get stuck in this endless hamster wheel of struggling to find interested people, trying to set themselves apart, trying to make the sale. I mean, often they feel like people only care about one thing, price. Do you know anyone like that? Mm-hmm. Now, of course they do, because I've gone to the right event. And then I will, once they respond, I'll say, well, I'm on a mission to help these individuals realize they're not second-class citizens. Their path to success is just different. They just have to focus on three things outside the scope of their functional skill. And they really can have a rapid growth business doing what they love. And then I might tell a story. Now, think of what I did that was different. I didn't make it about me. It's all about the things I love to see, the things I hate to see, and the mission that I'm on, right? It's all about service. And that really brings me back to everything that I do with networking. If you think about the message that I sent you, I think you liked a post to do with National Introverts Week. Now, by the way, there was no National Introverts Week until I founded it, because I'm on a mission to help introverts realize they're not second-class citizens. Well, to be aligned with that, if I was just about money, I would just be using that to try and get clients. Well, no, I founded an entire week behind it. I run a summit during that event. I do so much around it to support introverts to learn the skills and strategies. So what happened would be, because you were somewhere in my orbit, you liked or commented on one of the posts associated with that. Well, because of that, you were sent a connection request that said, hey, thanks so much for engaging on the National Introverts Week, on one of the National Introverts Week posts. As the founder of the week, I'm so honored that you would take the time, or thanks for helping me get the message out, or whatever the, you know, the exact words for the one, because we do a lot of A/B testing. But What happens is then people respond to that and they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know you were the founder, or, oh yeah, I'm an introvert. It starts this dialogue. And that then led to an audio dialogue between you and I, which you then invited me to be on your podcast. Now, you'll be surprised at some of the high-level individuals that gets me to meet, because most people think that we introverts are hiding under a bridge hoping no one talks to us. But actually, there are a lot of what I call secret introverted titans, amazing individuals that are doing amazing things. They just so happen to be introverted. But when somebody's successful, we project extroversion upon them. And that's the problem. And that's exactly what I'm trying to combat. So the number one rule that I have when it comes to marketing, when it comes to sales, when it comes to anything to do with your business is it's not about you, right? Funnily enough, I interviewed Ryan Dice, the founder of Digital Marketer on the Introvert's Edge podcast. And he was talking about how he's terrified to even get on stage, right? He won't go on stage unless there's a back exit because he's worried about getting trampled. But literally, he said for him, he became comfortable when he realized that it wasn't about him and what people thought of him. It was about everybody there and how he could make the most meaningful impact. And so realistically, when you're thinking about an introvert being authentic, about really delivering value, it's all about providing that value and making that difference in the world. So if you start from what am I passionate about and what mission am I on, i.e. what change do I want to see in the world, and then what specific group do I want to see that change in, who can I make meaningful change in, then everything else doesn't feel so uncomfortable. And usually you can introduce some of that warmth and that passion into everything you do, including something as horrific as a LinkedIn cold outreach message, which is what you received.
That is a perfect description of what it's all about. And a couple things came up for me when you were talking about that. First of all, you registered a whole week. I mean, that's amazing. I have Boundaries Awareness Day that I registered, but it's not a week. So congratulations on that. I'm really impressed. I didn't know we could do weeks. So,
well, I will put you in an interesting club of people that occurred to, right? For me, well, I'm not sure if I've just been watching too many American movies where they talk about the fact that you can buy anything in America. So it occurred to me that maybe you could buy a week. But what happened for me is I went, well, when I first came to America, I started speaking about rapid growth for small business owners, and I started speaking on Small Business Week, and I went, I wonder how the SBA, the Small Business Administration, organized that week. And I went, you know what? I want to see a National Introverts Week. And because of that, I started doing the research on how to do it, and it actually isn't that difficult. It's not inexpensive, but it's not difficult. So if it's something you really care about, then it makes sense. But again, the way I always look at missions cost money, right? Mm-hmm. So firstly, you have to be comfortable earning money, because otherwise you just blow your savings and then you won't be fighting in that mission for very long. So one of the things you have to understand is I have no issue charging people, because for me, that then allows to A, feed me, and also pays for all the things I do, including buying National Introverts Week and making that possible for people to celebrate. So a lot of people have this, I'm going to save the world mentality when it comes to business. And that's the wrong mindset, because unless you focus on saying, okay, well, I need to charge the world to save the world so that I can then get my content in front of more people. And again, if you are in that focus of mission mindset, then you're totally congruent doing that. Where if it's all about you and what you do, then every dollar you charge is all about you. And then while you may decide to give back later, because it's not part of the thought process, then you don't get past the discomfort of charging real money for what you do.
Mm. That's a really great mindset, because I think that a lot of coaches probably undercharge for their services, thinking they have mindset wounds around money, just and thinking of it as a tool as opposed to really this big bad thing that you're using. There's so many different ways that we could go on about it, but I really like that perspective of the way that you said congruency, that word specifically, because I think that could be very helpful for anybody who's like, how much should I charge for my services, right? How much should I charge to add this value?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, and I'm glad you use the word value, right? Because a lot of coaches, they use that, how much should I charge for an hour of my time? And my question is, well, how much is that hour of your time worth? Because I'll give you an example. Like when I work with people, sure, I've got an online academy, but I work with people on really short-term engagements. I might be the only coach you know that works with a client for only 6 hours and then fires them as a client. And it's not that I fire them. It's just at that point, they don't need a coach of my caliber anymore. They've got the strategy. They're already implementing it. They really have to get in their own way when it comes to rapid growth. And because of that, I just don't choose to continually charge them for something that they don't need. Usually a lot of other coaches can support them, and it doesn't need to be a coach of my caliber. But when I talk about what I charge for those hours, and some people will say, well, that's really low considering the value you give. Other people might say, well, that's high for only that many of hours. And I'm like, well, you know what? I could take the next 6 months to deliver you the same outcome as I could deliver in 6 hours if you would prefer. And they're like, oh, no, no, I'd prefer it sooner. And I'm like, well, we got to get our head straight, right? Right. So the thing is that people are used to, I mean, there's this old saying that we used to learn in telecommunication sales, like you pay peanuts, you get monkeys, right? So the truth is you can get a coach, a growth coach for $25 an hour on coach.me. Would I want that person to teach me how to charge really good amounts of money? Probably not, right? For me, and you know, I do still offer the ability for people to book calls with me. It takes 6 to 12 weeks to get a call with me just to talk about the possibility of working with me. And some people will respond and say, Matt, it takes this long to get a call with you. My needs are more urgent. And I'm like, well, there's not much I can do to help. But if you're willing to wait that period of time, I can show you how to grow your business so you too can have a waiting list of people that want to work with you, right? So when you have that level of value equation, charging the right amount of money is much, much easier. When you've got no clients and you're just starting, well, then you have a psychological issue with what is my dollar value worth? Well, what you've got to start looking at is you've got to start looking at what the outcomes of what you provide are. And what I've found with coaches is most of them don't know. So when I talk to a lot of coaches and, you know, I have a podcast called The Better Business Coach, and literally a lot of them, they focus on saying, well, what can I do to help you today? You know, what's your biggest problem today? Well, let's work on that. So what they say is what I help people with is so broad, and I never really know what the outcomes are. And I'm like, how can you congruently charge somebody money for something when you don't know the outcomes that you provide? Again, you're making it about you. It's about your back pocket. What I do is I say, here are the main things that I'm an absolute expert at. This is what I'm going to focus on. And when I do these things for an organization, because I know the answers, I can say, this is the ROI that these activities generate. Now, of course, if you don't do the work, it's going to generate nothing. But if you do the work, this is the ROI that it gets people to. And because of that, I can congruently say, this is how much it costs.
And you're right. If there are multi-passionate coaches out there with the term broadly listed as like life coach, it's going to be difficult to find, okay, specifically, that's why we talk about niching down. But I want to speak a little bit on, you know, where did you come up with that? Is that your mindset going in from the first day that you started outside of in sales, or did you have to grow into that mindset yourself?
Yeah. So I mean, a lot of what I'm sharing is hard learned. And I would safely say, like, and we can talk about my origin story for your audience later, but, you know, I will safely say that I should be the only definitely a person that's not up here telling people how to do things, right? I really struggled, and if it wasn't for a couple of really horrible events, I probably wouldn't be where I am today. So thank goodness for those horrible events, right? A lot of times I say it's the adversities we face that seed the success of our future. And I'm definitely a case study for that. But for me, what I found is that while I've been responsible for 5 multi-million dollar success stories, I was always selling somebody else's product or somebody else's thing. Or even if I had an educational course like my last business, it was still an external curriculum that was taught by other people. When you're a coach, I mean, it's really hard to not take rejection personally, right? Because you are the coach. And when you think about niching from a perspective of any other business, you can look at it and go, well, this is the widget, this is the group that's probably going to help. And you can kind of externally think about that. But when you tell a coach or any thought, you know, topic matter expert, right? I work with a lot of accountants, a lot of MSPs, managed service providers, you know, any type of person that has like a complicated product, or I mean, and by the way, marketers are the worst at this, right? But when you tell people that they have to niche down, it's much harder when it's about yourself, right? Because while you can externally say, well, people really care about this for you, but no one cares about this, this, this. When it's you, it's much harder because you're like, well, hang on a second. I spent years learning that. I can't even imagine somebody saying to me that that wasn't important. On top of that, while we know niching in theory makes sense, we kind of don't feel comfortable with it, right? Because we say to ourselves, well, okay, I've been told that I have to niche, but that means I've got to say no to customers and tell other customers that I'm not for them. And I'm not really up for that. So right now, any customer is a good customer. Once I start to really build traction in my business, then I'll start to niche down. And what happens is they never get to that stage. They end up giving up because when you've got less economies of scale, less experience, less talent, why would you want to compete like for like with anyone else? And truthfully, if you were trying to help people with sales and marketing, you're competing with someone like me who still doesn't sell to the entire world, right? Even now I'm still niched. So how do you deal with that? Well, the answer is you've got to be willing to let go. And what I suggest to people is they have to learn to not work exclusively with but use the words I specialize with this demographic. The reason why I love the word specialty is because you think about specialty doctors, for instance. You always assume that they have a higher general level of knowledge than every other doctor, which is why they were invited into a specialty. So I like to say I specialize with introverted service providers. And what people assume is, wow, he must be the best coach to be able to become a specialist in this. What's interesting is all those people that say they're coaches and still try to get clients, well, I'm still as, to everyone that's not in my niche, I'm still just as vanilla as those people, but I still have all this experience that I can leverage. So I still win, even if it's not my specialty, which is why, I mean, my client list includes multiple billion-dollar product companies. I work with a ton of extroverts that just they prefer system and process. So knowing your niche doesn't exclude you from other groups, but you can't talk passionately about helping all people. Right. So that's where the real problem comes. Like when you say, I'm on a mission to help people, people are like, yeah, right, whatever. Right. But when you say I'm passionate about helping introverted service providers realize they're not second class citizens, people are, all right, I can get behind that. And everything, every story I tell, every ideology that I share sings right to that group of people. Now, sure, I could customize it slightly for a product company, but I'm not going to do that in my external messaging. I mean, truthfully, I work with a client that has obtained rapid growth and now they're giving their business to their son and they want my help with that. And I told them that's not what I specialize in. And they're like, we don't care. You're the only one that I trust. It doesn't mean you can't help people with other things. It just means when you're externally marketing, this is all you share. So, I mean, how did I come up with the concept of unified message? Well, what happened was I started going to networking events and I'd go to different activities and people would ask me what I did. And the first time I made the mistake of saying I was a sales trainer. And people looked at me like I was one step above a scam artist, right? And my ideal clients, the introverts, of course, they shut down first. And I was like, this is not going to work. But when I said I was a marketer, people looked at me and they went, oh, I need marketing. How much do you cost? And now I'm talking about price. I just met them. And now I'm trying to sidestep that. It was uncomfortable. So what I did is I said, what if I came up with a word that enticed people to want to know more? And that was it. And so that's why I started calling myself the rapid growth guy. And what I realized is when I did that, people leaned forward. And funnily enough, you know, I've done this with so many different groups of people now. And to talk about an industry that most people struggle with, the industry of insurance agents, right? Selling insurance is something that everybody would imagine would be one of the worst things to sell. And this guy, I mean, he actually really did want to help. And he'd go to networking events and he'd be interested for 20 minutes. And they'd eventually ask what he did. And he said, as soon as I said I was an insurance agent, you would watch the terror go over their eyes. They're like, how do I get away from this person? And I said, okay, well, we need to create this unified message. But what we did was I started asking him, what is he passionate about? And he's like, well, I just really want to help people. And I went, all right, people, yes, okay, let's go a little bit deeper. Do you want to help all people? No, I promise, Matt, all people. And I said, all right, well, what if they earn like 50,000 versus 200,000? He said, well, obviously the 200,000. I said, well, why? And he said, well, because they earn more money. And I'm like, well, then you don't want to help all people. You're all about money. I said, but let's live with the 200. Let's see if we can find some passion. I said, well, let me ask you, let's imagine for a second that I was a graduate from Harvard. Maybe I grew up in a poor neighborhood and I studied really hard. I got a scholarship to Harvard. I finally graduated and I now earn 200,000 working in a corporation and I manage a whole group of people versus I didn't even graduate high school, but I saved up. I started my own business and now I make $200,000 a year and I've got a team. Which one of those would you like to help the most? And he said, well, obviously the small business owner. I said, what do you mean the small business owner? I mean, the guy from Harvard, I mean, he really picked himself up by his bootstraps and got himself to be successful. And his response was, I just feel that they deserve it more. I'm like, tell me a little bit about that. And he said, well, I had a grandfather. And it's funny how everything always, when you start to ask more questions and get people beyond people's fear of hedging and niching, then all of a sudden there's a story. There's a unique past experience, past background, past thing. Like for me, the reason I care about small business owners is I watched one of my best friends across the road's family break up because they started a business and they were all happy until they weren't. And then I got to see my friend half as often. Well, for this guy, his grandfather had saved up and bought a farm. And he loved working in this farm and he always prioritized his team. And he was just an amazing farmer and business owner until he got sick because he never prioritized his own retirement. He never prioritized his own insurance. He had to sell the farm just to pay for medical bills and things like that. And then He said, yeah, I just watched my grandfather sit on the couch and fade away over the last 10 years of his life. And I said, I just never want to see another business owner do that. I'm like, hang on, you didn't die. You sell insurance. How could you have helped? And then he started to educate me about these insurance plans where you put your cash flow in and it gives you a high interest yield. And then you can eventually spin that into property. He said, if my grandfather had done that, it was a high cash flow business. Any high cash flow business can do this. Then he would have ended up with a great retirement. But because he didn't even think about this for a second, he couldn't. And I said, well, how would you feel about helping those people that just, you know, hustle every day, the grinders of the world, kind of create something out of nothing, not live those second class retirements? He said, well, I would love that. So I said, well, why don't we call you the hustle lifeguard, right? Protecting those people that have got the hustle. So now he goes to the networking events and he says he's the hustle lifeguard. When people ask, he shares these stories of people that had these issues. He talks about his passion and his mission. And because of that now, his business has skyrocketed. And I've seen this happen time and time again. As long as you don't fit in this box that people can either say, like sales trainer, I don't want and exclude you, or, oh, I need that, how much do you cost? But get people to lean in like I'm the rapid growth guy. And then as soon as you talk about what you love to see, what you hate to see, the mission that you're on, I mean, they're just engaged. They want to hear a story. And at the end of that, they're like, oh my gosh, I want what Nick has, or I want what Wendy has. And then all you've got to do is know it's now not time to sell. I'm at a networking event, right? I need to dial it back. I need to set up another meeting. I need to remind them that that's not what they came here to do. And it becomes so easy. The problem is that most people have no idea how to separate themselves, because as people, we want to be part of a club. And we always get told that when we graduate university, we have to pick which club we want, which degree we want, right? So I want to be a copywriter. I want to be a data analyst. And then we go and get jobs that fit that category. And then when we leave to go and start our own business, we think we have to fill a box. Well, the truth is, the only way you don't succeed in business, well, one of the major ways you don't succeed in business, is that you fit a box, which means you commoditize yourself by saying, I'm a life coach, I'm a business coach, which basically means that if I'm not the cheapest, well, because I'm part of the box, and everybody that's outside the box assumes we are all the same, good luck getting paid what you deserve.
Wow, that's true. I mean, and listening to that story right there, I was just thinking of how many times he could basically say, you know, his unique message, and then people can, and it does entice people to get more curious. I would want to know, okay, tell me more. Tell me about what that means. So did you know that you were the rapid growth guy right off the bat, or did it take you a little bit of time to get to that?
You know, it's funny. So for my clients, it takes me about 2 to 3 hours to come up with a unified message and strategy for them. For me, it took closer to 2 to 3 months. Why? Because I was much more connected to who I was. And sure, I had to come up with the ideology and the concept, but I was much more connected to all the things that I do that took me a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to learn that just aren't the things I'm best at, right? Mm-hmm. So because of that, I went, well, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. But the truth was, I really had to look at what was unique about me. And you know, I was an introvert that learned how to sell after losing my job just before Christmas and getting thrust into a commission-only sales role. I had to learn to market. And then I went back to study an MBA and realized how ridiculous a lot of the MBA master's marketing concepts are for small business. Like spending $30,000 on a data analysis plot to work out where your niche might be is probably not that good an idea for somebody that only has $15,000 to start their business. So I started to realize that what was taught in common marketing ideology didn't fit small business, that most introverts struggle with sales because I knew I did. And what I realized is that I had a unique mix that was able to do a few things. One is that I actually knew how sales and marketing fit together. And I think that most people don't have a clue, right? That because most salespeople hate marketers, and most marketers think most salespeople are under-degree qualified people that are lucky to get paid what they're getting paid. There's no respect there. But then worse, most online marketers and most offline marketers and vice versa, and the same with sales, tend to not speak to each other as well. So I have the ability to bridge all of that. But then also, I'm neuro-linguistic training, I'm NLP trained. So I understand the psychology of thought and the persuasive words to use in the languaging of both sales scripting and marketing scripts. So because of that, I understand the psychology of thought, which I thought would provide the hugest value in the sales and marketing. But the truth is that the biggest value it provides is learning, it was the strategies I learned to help us introverts get out of our own way. Because we just get in our own way when it comes to rapid growth. We focus, you know, even though we're really reflective and really empathetic people, because we think we're supposed to behave more extroverted, we behave in a way that's not congruent with our natural personality type, because we think that we're supposed to be about making money. We focus on that as opposed to we're on a mission to make money. And because we are so worried about how other people perceive us, we don't put ourselves in a place where people can see the best version of ourselves. And a lot of times we're in the way with all of that. But, you know, it even gets worse. I mean, I see so many people, I do this thing where I ask people to write 6 goals, right? 3 business, 3 personal goals, 1 selfish to themselves, because that's the one that drives us. And then I say, okay, that's really a means to an end. Just summarize each one of these goals in 250 words or less, including why it's important to you. Well, the high achievers can write those goals really quickly. But when it comes to writing why it's important to them, they realize it's not. They've inherited that goal from their mother, their father, I don't know, drunk roommate they had in college. They just hear these things and they run after them. Now, you'd consider this life coaching, wouldn't you? But when you think about it, if they don't have congruent goals, they're always going to be hedging and jumping around in their business and jumping from business to business. So life and business are one in the same a lot of times when you're thinking about a business from its foundations. And even CEOs of billion-dollar companies that I've worked with, it's the same. If their life goals and career goals aren't dovetailed together, well, good luck keeping their focus and keeping them engaged. So you have to make sure that they are. Now, what I find, though, is introverts, on the other hand, a lot of times the goals that they have, while they aren't so scattered and they do know what they want because they're a lot more internal thinkers, what I find, though, is they're so practical and logical in the way that they do things that a lot of times these whys are because I want to earn money for my family. I want this. I need this. I've got to achieve this. And it's got nothing to do with the people that they went into business to serve. And most introverts went into business, yes, because they wanted a business that revolved around them. But they also saw that their boss doing this wasn't providing a service the way they thought it should be done. And they wanted to put their flavor into it. Most people that moved into coaching was because they wanted to provide value to their ideal customers in a way that they thought that only they could. But then once they started their own business, because they didn't stay true to this in their goals, they end up trying to bend themselves to every customer's want and need, as well as constantly hammer down their price so they feel devalued. Then it's demoralizing. They end up going to get a job somewhere else. So neuro-linguistic programming really taught me that if you don't know what you want and you don't know how to articulate it the right way, then you lose it along the way. And what I knew is that if I could combine all of that, then I could help people create the mindset strategy and the business strategy and the sales strategy to slingshot their business forward. Well, what would work really well with that was rapid growth. Now, most people get it wrong. When I say rapid growth, the reason why I've used that word is it's rapid emotional growth, rapid spiritual growth, rapid profit growth. I couldn't care less if you end up with more staff, because a lot of people don't want 20 staff. They just want to make great profit doing what they love. But a lot of people focus on revenue or hiring staff. And it's funny how many times I see people's goals and they're like, I want to have a team of 10. I'm like, well, why? What if you made more profit with it, just you? Or I want to have, you know, $1 million revenue. And I'm like, I speak for a load of EO groups and they have to have $1 million just to be a member. Well, there are $1 million revenue companies there that make $900,000 in profit and some that keep borrowing lunch money off their staff members because they all earn money, more money than them. So you have to really understand all of the elements go together. And that's what I realized that my unique competencies allow me to achieve. Because my belief is that everybody listening to this is unique. We're all unique in our own specific ways. We have different life experiences. We have different upbringings. We have different past customers, different qualifications, different books we've read. And all of that qualify us to help a group obtain an outcome or just help a group specifically in general with all their items that they need in a way that nobody else can. The problem is that we're so used to trying to fit into boxes or we're so worried about failing that we just vanilla ourselves and that is the reason we fail. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oof, a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's powerful stuff there. I mean, even listening to your book, I heard you say that you wanted something that spoke to you on a spiritual level. And so I can hear that now in your voice when you're describing what it is that you do, how you do it, who you serve, and all of these beautiful ingredients coming together to form this beautiful, unique, rapid growth cake. And so I'm just so blown away that I could see the tie-in now with the spirituality, because I was going to ask you, you know, specifically a spiritual level, like, can you say more about how that that is more meaningful to you than just this idea. But you kind of already did right there, just describing everything. So it's a great mindset to have during this process, because, you know, those limiting beliefs come up fast and furious if we're not paying attention and don't have the self-awareness around it. Very profound stuff there. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I will say that a lot of people are worried about whether or not they can create a rapid growth business. And having built several myself, the one thing I can tell you is there's only one thing worse than leaving a job that you don't like to go and start a business and not succeeding. It's actually creating a rapid growth business with customers you don't like and a business you can't stand. Mm-hmm. And speaking from somebody that's done that several times, you become the worst boss to you because you're not happy being there. So if you don't start a business that excites and inspires you to help people and that every day bounces you out of bed. First thing is that I can tell you the energy levels I have for what I do now compared to the energy levels I had for those businesses. Sure, I still succeeded, but that was because there wasn't somebody that had the skill set that I had. But if you go like for like on skill set, if somebody was just as talented as I was in this business, I would still run circles around them because I'm more productive than anyone else I know in this industry. I am much more energetic. I mean, I've been, you know, up, and there was a story in my first book about how, you know, my family kept me up until a ridiculous hour. I was trying to sleep. I had TV interviews the following morning. I got no sleep. And then I had a recording afterwards. And by the end of the day, I was still pushing all the people that were yawning around me to keep going because I love doing what I do. How do you compete with that? You just can't. So if you have this thing, this mission, this passion that you almost feel on a spiritual level. And I've seen this. I know that we're talking about introversion and people are like, well, hang on a second. I could get inspired by that, but I couldn't get inspired. I don't know how, like, people, well, Nick got it done with insurance. I can give you a story about a copywriter that did it. I can tell you about a managed service provider that just maintains computers that was able to do the same, right? Remember how I said that a lot of times we get in our own way when it comes to rapid growth. If you heard this and said it's not possible in my industry, well, then I want to tell you that you're wrong. And what I would suggest, and you don't need to hire me to do this. I know we talked about the fact I work with people in short engagements, but truthfully, if everyone reached out tomorrow, I wouldn't have time to work with everybody. So the template that I would suggest that everyone downloads to do this is just go to matthewpollard.com/growth. This is an exercise that I do in workshops of, you know, a couple of hundred people, and we get amazing results. As a matter of fact, I did it at the National Freelance Conference, and I literally said, you know, at the end of the event, I said, now put your hand up if you now believe you have a unified message, your version of the hustle lifeguard, the China success coach, the rapid growth guy, that'll excite and inspire people to want to know more. Yeah, you do? Good. I can't wait to hear yours, by the way. And a niche of willing to buy clients, you know, people that will just be excited, inspired to want to hire you and pay you what you're worth. Like 97% of the room put their hands up, which sounds great. Until I said, look, just do me a favor. Just keep your hand up if this is the most time you've actively spent on your marketing. Because a lot of people say, I read 100 books. I'm like, great. How many did you apply? None, right? You can download this template, but if you don't do it and you don't give it time, right? People say, oh, I thought about it while I was driving to an appointment. Not enough. This session took 90 minutes and 97% of the room kept their hands up that it worked. Most people had never spent that amount of time. And that's why 85% of the room kept their hands up saying, this is the most time I've spent actively working on the marketing. So if you download this at matthewpollard.com/growth, listen, get a friend of yours that also you think struggles to charge what they're worth, and also not somebody in the same industry as you, to listen to this same podcast. Once you've done that, work together for 2 hours, spend an hour on them, get them to spend an hour on you, and you will be miles further than you are now. Yeah. Usually, most people listen to podcasts and they don't take action. If you take this one action, all of a sudden you'll realize that there was an obvious niche for you and a unified message that makes sense, that other people will go, oh my gosh, I need that. Or what exactly is that? Tell me more. And then once you learn how to network in a way that's not all about you, you'll be blown away at the results that gets you.
Incredible. I actually feel like I need to pause on that and not tell you mine, because I feel like I could do some more work on it just listening to that. I'm like, 90 minutes, maybe I should have spent a little bit more time, because you're right. It is very important to go back. It took me a while to figure out, really get specific on what I want to hone in on with my clients and what really makes me passionate about helping people with boundaries. And the communication was a big part of it, because I know how hard, especially an introvert might be, to struggle with communicating their boundary. And so it wasn't until I listened to your book and found out the true difference between an introvert and an extrovert that I realized, I think I thought I was an introvert, but after hearing you discuss and that example of being on that podcast after being tired or doing that interview and being like, let's go, let's go, let's go. That's exactly how I feel when I get off of an interview with a podcast guest. I'm like, woohoo, let's go, let's do it, let's do more. So I was very enlightened, to say the least, with my outcome with that. But yeah. Okay. I have about 100 more questions, and I literally only have gotten to one page of this as it goes. You spoke about it a little bit, but for the introvert who feels that there is a limiting belief or that they feel like they're bragging about themselves when they're conveying their value, how can we reframe that so that way they feel comfortable and it doesn't feel, because some people have some attachment to, that's not how I was raised. We don't talk about ourselves in this big way. How can you reframe it and give examples for anybody who is an introvert who wants to convey their value, but do it in a way that aligns with their own personal values and their spirituality of what they feel about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually think the people that don't feel comfortable self-promoting themselves actually do firstly, they do a bad job of promoting themselves, but then secondly, they come across as more promotional than the ones that do feel comfortable with it. But the real question it comes back to, how do you want to represent yourself? And what is it, what actual difference do you want to make in the world, right? Until you really understand that, and really think through your product then and the service that you provide, it's really hard to articulate that in front of someone else. And, you know, I know we talked about Nick, and that's a great example, but for completeness, I can give you another example. I worked with a language coach out of California. She taught kids and adults Mandarin. I mean, if you think about something commoditized, that's it. I mean, not only did she have to deal, I mean, she charged $50 to $80 an hour for over a decade. And then all these people moved into California. They wanted to do the same thing. They charged $30 an hour. Then, thanks to the global economy we live in, $12 an hour on Craigslist directly from China. Then, thanks to our friends in Silicon Valley, now there's technology. I'll teach you Mandarin, you teach me English. We won't charge anyone anything. She's competing against free. So she comes to me and she's like, well, how do I articulate what I do in a really comfortable way? Because I feel really uncomfortable doing the average salesmanship kind of strategies. It's uncomfortable for me. And I'm like, well, honestly, this is a long spiral to the bottom if you don't learn to separate yourself. For a lot of introverts that are listening, if you don't do your homework, if you don't do that little bit of legwork beforehand, you end up stuck in this uncomfortable place. And because of that, all the heavy lifting needs to happen in sales and networking, which is horrible. So for her, I started to look at all the clients she'd worked with. And of the hundreds she'd worked with, there were these two executives that she worked with far more than just language tuition. These people were being, you know, transferred to China. And she helped them understand the difference in rapport in China versus the Western world. Like the difference between, like in the Western world, I might try and sell you something. And if I'm really bad at sales, at the end of, you know, 45 minutes, I might say something horrible like, do you want to move forward? And you'll say yes, no, or everyone's favorite, let me think about it. If I check in next week and you still say you want to think about it, I'm not getting that sale probably. Yet in China, they're going to want to see you 5 or 6 times. They're probably going to want to see you drunk over karaoke once or twice, even before they discuss business. It's just the character of who they are, because they're talking about much longer contracts, 20, 30, 50 year deals. On top of that, so she helped them understand that. She helped them understand the difference between e-commerce in China and the Western world, the importance of reducing your accent, not just learning the language, and how to handle a business card. And I'm like, these things are amazing, you know, Wendy. You're doing so much more for these people. What are you doing? And this is what I mean. Because people explain the functional of what they do, then they feel they have to sell it, becomes uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. What she said, because everybody devalues what they're amazing at, right? Especially introverts. We have a tendency to do that. She said, well, there's just a few things. I'm just trying to help. I'm like, you're stuck in your functional skill. Is it fair to assume as a result of assisting these people, they're going to be more successful when they go to China? And she's like, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the point, right? I said, great. Why don't we call you the China Success Coach then? She loved the idea, but she's like, well, who do I sell it to? Now she's going to go out and do all this uncomfortable networking. I said, well, who do you think you sell it to? She's like, well, obviously the executive. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I was terrified moving from Australia to the US. They speak the same language here. I get why they would be terrified, but I don't think it's your ideal client. She's like, well, obviously the company would pay. She's going where the money is, right? Mm-hmm. So she's like, obviously the company would pay. And I'm like, yeah, I see that too. And they've got a lot of times millions of dollars riding on an executive being successful. I just don't think it's your ideal client. So she's starting to get frustrated. And her response was, well, who then? And I said, well, I think your ideal client is the immigration attorney. And she looked at me, she's like, what? And I said, think about it. These people make $5,000 to $7,000 for all the paperwork and bureaucracy that getting a visa takes, but they've also got to get the client. They've got offices, staff to pay for. They'd be lucky to make $3,000 for a simple, you know, for doing all of that. I said, so just offer them $3,000 for a simple introduction that results in a sale. So she started going networking with these immigration attorneys. They love the idea. They're like, double my profit for a simple introduction. What do I have to say? She just said, just say, look, congratulations, you've got your visa. I just want to double check you're as ready as possible to be relocated to China. They would always respond with, yeah, I think we're good. Visa now. Thank you. Got our place sorted. We're learning the language. Kids are getting pretty good at it too. And they just respond with, there's actually a lot more to it than that. I think you need to speak to the China success coach. Now she's got people chasing her. And wow. She had the easiest sale in the world. Instead of charging $50 to $80 an hour for this five-week program, she charged $30,000. She made $27,000 for the easiest sale in the world. Now, all of a sudden, instead of her hustling to find clients and not helping people, she's got this group of people that she's serving and another group of people that's chasing her. Now, what I've learned is through the world of digital marketing these days, you can sidestep the immigration attorneys and get directly to the ideal people and get them to chase you. The problem is that most people's messaging is wrong. It's vanilla. So just like networking, if you're terrible at networking and everything you do is vanilla just like everyone else, you've got to be the loudest in the room and you've got to go to more networking events. And it's the same on social media. You've got to post on blogs all the time. You've got to be on podcasts every 10 seconds. You've got to take a photo of your donut for something to say on Instagram. For me, if you can't be the clearest, you have to be the loudest. However, I chose to be the clearest, get my message rock solid. And if you do that, you really can break through the noise. And that's what I've learned in networking. If you want to be authentic, make sure your message is firstly connected with your passion, so the pain's worth the gain, but then make sure that it is crystal clear. Spend your time getting the messaging right and understand the demographic of people. And don't get in your own mindset junk that forces you to spread the niche or pick more than one niche or broaden the message for all groups of people. As soon as you do that, you can create rapid growth. And better than that, you can do it in an authentic way, where a lot of times people introduce you to your ideal customers all the time because they can feel your difference to everyone else they're speaking to.
It makes a difference too, because the emotional intelligence chip of what she's doing to add value doesn't only just help her, it helps the people that she's going to be collaborating with when she's in China, right? When she's starting to integrate there, and they can see that she's taken the time to put in the work to do that. I mean, that shows a lot of love and respect, I think, culturally to collaborate. So incredible shift for your client there. It's great to hear. Let's see. I think I'd love to jump into, you know, I have 100,000 more questions, but I want to be mindful of your time.
Sounds like I might have to come back.
Oh, don't threaten me with a good time. I'm ready for that. Okay. So let's do rapid fire with it. How do you recharge your introvert battery?
I watch way too much TV.
Anything particular that you like to watch? Any show?
You know, it often doesn't matter what's on. What generally finds with me, and I don't, half the time I watch the show and I won't even remember watching it. It's really just the act. It's more of a meditative thing for me. But what I find is when I meditate, I ruminate on the podcast and things like that. And that's a negative thing. So for me, I'll always think through and use that rumination muscle to look at what I can improve. But I'll do that tomorrow when I'm not as emotionally fractured as after doing an interview or speaking from stage. So for me, I need something that challenges me enough to keep me engaged without forcing me to think too hard. So anything that's kind of more of a light show, or funnily enough, you know, anything that's getting blown up and things like that also can get my mind off things, because it's not, you know, a lot of those shows, they're not really intelligent. They're just blowing stuff up, right? So because of that, it really doesn't matter what's on the show. But I do prefer more lighthearted comedies, you know, things like that. And, you know, anything that I can kind of switch on the moment I get off an interview like this.
Nice. Excellent. Favorite book. What is your favorite book that you can tell us to share with the audience?
So I really like Rich Dad Poor Dad. I think especially his second one, Cashflow Quadrant, because I think there are a lot of people that are trying to get out of employment and move to running their own business, get stuck in self-employment. They don't really understand the difference. So I actually think that's a really valuable book. And I was very glad I learned that early on.
We didn't even really dive deep into, you know, your origin story of how this all happened. But I know that there is one particular tool that you used online, YouTube, to help you really inform yourself about how to just get even better at what you know you could do already. So what YouTube channel or YouTube educators would you say helped you really fine-tune your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will tell you, there were a ton, but Kerwin Ray was a great one. Zig Ziglar, by the way, he's probably the most well-known sales trainer in the world, and he actually happens to be an introvert as well, which most people are shocked to know. Their stuff was great. I actually liked a lot of Brian Tracy's stuff as well. He's very systematic in his approach, but he's obviously not an introvert. But one of the things that I find is I literally lost my job just before Christmas. I fell into commission-only sales. It was 93 doors of rejection before my first sale. And literally, instead of giving up, I made the decision sales had to be a system. And YouTube, because I had a reading speed of a sixth grader in Light High School, was the only platform for me that I could really figure out how to really lock into. And I was lucky to discover those videos. But what I was more lucky to discover rather than the people was the fact that a lot of them listed systems. And again, don't get into busy procrastination where you overcomplicate this. What I recommend is find any system that has a step-by-step process, ideally somebody that's introverted that's teaching it so you can believe that it's possible for you. And don't worry about the bells and whistles. Just focus on the very basic system. Get it, if you like, focus on Henry Ford, right? Just get the car off the line and then focus on the bells and whistles later. Like he used to say, you could have any color car you want as long as it's black. And the reason for that is he wanted to just get it off the line. I would say the same thing. The best thing for an introvert is if you have that external process, then you can use your mindset of experimentation. You can ruminate, but instead of taking it as a negative against yourself, that rejection, you can look at what to improve in your sales process. And that becomes a superpower for the average introvert. Once you've nailed that basic system, then worry about the bells and whistles.
Productive rumination. I like that. I like that a lot. Excellent. What's the most interesting thing you've learned recently?
Oh gosh, outside that AI is going to take over the world. I really think that I've learned more and more that one of the funny things is that the Nobel Prize, you know, goes to the person that has the idea, not the person that does the work. And I've always felt that that was important because it's the person that can ask the right questions that should deserve a lot of the accolades, right? And I think AI has actually proven that in a lot of ways because AI is only as good as the person that writes the prompts. And it's just proven over and over again that if you're one of those people that has boundless ideas and boundless imagination and boundless creativity, while the problem when you're starting a business because it help pushes you to split your niches and you need to control it, once you've got a successful business or once you're in a career that you love, having that boundless imagination is really important. And, you know, AI will, I believe, always be limited by the by people that can do that. That being said, you know, for those people that are worried about AI, that's the skill set you want to grow.
Mm. I'm really glad you brought up AI because it's at the top of a lot of people's minds. And I just happened to come across a beer commercial that was created by an AI and it was disturbing, to say the least. It was quite out there. If you Google it, I'm sure you'll see what I'm talking about, but it's incredible to see what they're doing out there. But you're right, a user is definitely the prompter, and however creative the prompter can be will be the innovation is exponential.
Absolutely. And I love the technology. I mean, for me, we've just uploaded all my books, all of my past interviews into a knowledge base that we've created. We've created our own tools for doing this. And we are now, we've got bots to the point that they're talking like me and they're writing blogs and they're allowing me to help a whole bunch of people that I would never have helped before. Now, they're not written as me, but they're written as like me. And the reason for that is anything that I put my name on has to be checked and confirmed by me. But I want to make sure that I'm also putting out a ton more content out there. So the goal for me is to make sure that I can help more people. And if I can reduce the cost of creating content to help more people, then I can help even more people. So, and that's the thing that you've got to look at with AI. Again, if you're mission focused, you say, oh, I'm going to make more money. Well, yeah, you should make more money, but it's more about how do you, if you have a mission that you're on, how do you impact more people? And the answer to that is reducing the cost of delivery. And AI definitely allows you to do that.
As you're saying that, I just realized we created about 500,000 other jobs for educators, for elementary schools, for all these places that need to apply ethically sound ways to, you know, help younger generations use AI platforms as they're starting to experiment, because that it's there, right? The technology is there. We have to use it in an ethical format. How are we going to do that? We need people to kind of supervise it, human absolutely. People to supervise it. So,
well, absolutely. But, you know, just like when technology first came, the internet first came out, and you had a lot of black hat techniques, they may excel for a small period of time, but I like to think karma comes back to get them, but usually smart people work out how to catch those people out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Amen. I know you appreciate a good plot twist. I think it's in chapter 6. You talk about the plot twist with storytelling, right? So I did my homework. I was really, really all in with this. I was super excited to have you on here. So what future plot twist do you want to manifest for yourself, for your future self, I should say?
Future plot twist. Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. I'm actually manifesting it at the moment. So I think the great thing about the Introvert's Edge book series, because it's gone on to sell, I think, over 80,000 copies, it's in 16 languages now, is that my brand's kind of grown to a point where it's really starting to impact a lot of people's lives. But it's become, and it always needs to be, every brand originally needs to be about the founder, but then eventually it needs to grow beyond the founder. And so my plot twist is I'm trying to make it not about me now. So the whole idea of National Introverts Week is I showcase a whole bunch of other introverted experts or experts that are introverted. I do the same on Global Introverts Day. And, you know, we've got Introvert You now, which has a whole a library of content written by introverts. Is the focal point for me is really about showcasing other introverted specialists in this world. Because, I mean, people come to me for advice on how to parent their children or how to lead an organization. And while some of these things I have the answers for, and some of them perhaps I have too many answers for, there are other things that I really don't have the authority to be speaking on, but there are other people that do. It's just I'm the one with the word introvert on my cover of my book. And so because of that, people come to me. So for me, the plot twist is that the topic of introversion really isn't about me. It's about helping introverts realize they're not second-class citizens. And that really is my focus over the coming years.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. Wow. Matthew, you are a vast wealth of knowledge and experience and story. And everything that you've said today, I know will help a lot of listeners, especially my introverted listeners who are interested in really going out there, maybe pivoting, maybe finding another job. Maybe they want to upgrade their business techniques. I just want to let the audience know where they can find you. On social media, your website, all the good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I put a ton of free content out on social media. I pay the favor to YouTube, so you can find some great stuff there. But, you know, for those people that are listening, my recommendation is to go to matthewpollard.com/growth. Just start with that template and work with someone after listening to this podcast with them. Or if you're an introvert that believes you can't sell, go and download the first chapter of The Introvert's Edge, and you'll quickly realize, A, you can. And I actually literally outlined the full 7 steps. If you do nothing more than grab what you currently say and put that in to that, and you'll realize that there's some things out of order. There's some things that don't fit. Throw that out. You shouldn't be saying it to customers. And then fill in the gaps. You'll double your sales in the next 60 days, no problem. And if you're a networker or if you think you're an introvert that can't network, go to theintrovertsedgetonetworking.com and I'll do the same thing for you in the first chapter of that book.
Amazing. Adding value so quickly in small steps for the audience. Thank you for that. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. Your feedback helps us to continue to bring you engaging and informative contact with industry experts like yourself, Matthew. Thank you so much. I just created this using AI, you guys. And so I want to say this because this is the first time that I'm laying it out there. But remember, AI created this, okay? Remember, everyone's journey is unique and what works for one person may not work for another. So take what you need and want and leave the rest for someone who needs, wants the piece you left. We hope our conversations have inspired you to take action and make positive changes in your life. And just remember to be your best self and stay twisted, everybody. Thank you so much, Matthew. We hope to have you on again very, very soon.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. Tune in next time and remember, stay twisted.